everybody. Welcome back to Ping. This is episode 167 weeks of us bringing you all the hottest stories Microsoft users are pinging each other about. And as of lately, us bringing us really, really interactive commentary with you guys, which we always appreciate. All the stuff you guys share with us on our messages and in the comment section on the Channel 9 website, on Facebook, wherever it is that you're finding our videos. So that's awesome. And last week we had asked you about Paul's website. And Paul, I think you said that this you've actually found things that they had to say were useful.
Yeah, it was certainly useful to have people look at the site to see how it performs across the world, since the Channel 9 does have a very worldwide audience, and it was nice to see how it performed on different tablet devices and phones and all sorts of good stuff. So I do appreciate the developer audience going out there and giving me a nice technical rundown of how it's working, as well as some people giving us some stylistic feedback. So I really do appreciate that.
Now, when you ask for people's opinions, let me ask you if it's the same in like web development land as it is when I show people a rough cut of a video, right? And I say to them, hey, this is, you know, it's just early, you know, call it beta version, whatever. A lot of times they'll come back to me with what I like to say is useless crap. In terms of their feedback, it's like, hey, this would be better if you put some music in, or why can I still see the time code, or like things that obviously will be fixed later. So do you find that the same is true when you ask people for their thoughts on your website, where they come back at you with like, I really didn't like that shade of red that you chose, or do you get more meaty, useful responses?
I think everything was pretty much spot on. There were definitely some spacing issues. There were some font selection issues. There's some things that we still need to clean up. And there's also, I guess there's a little bit of feedback that we probably won't take. Like, I think we're likely not gonna switch the mapping provider that we have just for the some other reasons that we have to use that. But overall, I thought the feedback was quite good. Thankfully, nobody said that we needed a substantial redesign or anything like that. That would not be in our time budget at the moment.
Well, then we should throw it out there to our Ping audience, who apparently has worthwhile opinions, if they have any feedback on our show, if there's anything that they think we should do. Obviously, short of firing me, we're open to anything.
you can fire me, though, if that's the topic.
No, Paul can stick around, too. You know, we've gone through so many iterations in terms of different backgrounds and different styles and different little segments that we do. So I'm wondering if there were things that people wanted us to bring back, or they just love it the way it is. It's perfect. Don't touch it. Probably that's what we'll get the most of. But if you guys do have any sort of thoughts, suggestions for the show, please let us know. And other than that, I think we should start the show, Paul.
Let's do it.
All right, Paul. So lately it seems like almost everywhere you turn, a charity or a corporation or somebody is creating a campaign to help Africa. And obviously some of these are more successful and more helpful than others. And Microsoft is sort of jumping in, but in a different way, with a new campaign called For Africa, where we're actually investing, I think it was $75 million to revitalize the African sector and really help promote internet activity and web development and I think web designers down there in Africa.
Yeah, so the For Africa initiative is a partnership between Microsoft and a Chinese electronics company called Huawei, and Microsoft has committed $75 million over the next few years to try and build up spur economic development inside Africa, and it seems like a pretty impressive program. So this isn't Microsoft's first foray into Africa. Microsoft's been doing business in Africa for 20 years or 22 years, for a long portion of Microsoft's history. And now, instead of providing just aid or a lot of the humanitarian efforts, which are, you know, also incredibly valuable, this is more to try and spur economic development so that people can make money and sustainably help themselves.
So rather than, you know, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man to fish, feed him for a lifetime, rather than just giving them computers, we're actually trying to spur economic growth in terms of technology in Africa.
Yeah, exactly. So the goals that they have is over the next few years, like between now and 2016, they want to place tens of millions of smart devices in the hands of African youth. They want to bring 1 million African small and medium-sized enterprises online. And they want to help an additional 100,000 graduates to develop skills that are on the more technical developer end, and Microsoft will help 75% of them get placed into jobs. So those are some pretty incredible and lofty goals that will make a serious impact not only on the African economy, but also likely make a large impact on the internet economy and being able to have that many more competent developers and engineers readily available.
Absolutely. So it's a sort of an untapped market that we're going to go in there and help teach and train and you know, become sustainable. Absolutely commendable work.
Yeah, yeah. And in the very short term, by actually the end of this month, by the end of February 2013, the 4 Africa is actually a Windows Phone 8 device that will be available in Angola, Egypt, Ivory Coast, Kenya, Morocco, Nigeria, and South Africa. So I was actually unfamiliar that they were going to have a branded 4 Africa fully functional Windows Phone 8 device that comes preloaded with apps that are designed for Africa. Microsoft has another developer initiative that's related to this called App Factory, where people can submit requests for African-relevant Windows apps, whether they're, you know, the Windows 8 or Windows Phone 8, and they're staffed by a bunch of, like I think it was 30 student interns that go through and they sift through the submissions, are paid by Microsoft, and then there's teams that will go through and take these ideas that are relevant to the region and actually go through and implement that. So this has just all sorts of facets and great initiatives, and I'm really looking forward to seeing how Microsoft can help accelerate the uplifting of the economic development in Africa.
Yeah, absolutely. And hopefully there'll be a Microsoft office opened down there, and I'll get to go to it.
Yeah, there are actually a lot of Microsoft offices down there. I think there's...
Road trip! All right, so in the past, Microsoft has actually taken some jabs at our friends over at Google. There was an ad campaign, I think it was called the Gmail Man, hilarity. There was, over the holiday season, a website called Scroogled, talking about some of the ways the shopping results come up on Google versus the way they come up on Bing. And apparently now we are going to launch another new sort of attacking campaign, talking about the privacy issues in Google's email, in Gmail. And, you know, while there's a lot of different opinions out there, and of course I have one as well, I want to get your take first on what the benefits are to these campaigns, if you're in favor of them, and what do you think they say about Microsoft as a whole?
Sure. So I liked a lot of the underlying meaning behind some of these campaigns. So like the Gmail man, I thought was a little hokey personally. The Scroogled thing that came out about the Gmail product search, I thought was actually on point. Like that actually delivered some knowledge that I didn't already know, where when you do a specific product-based search, it only goes through paid listings on Google and doesn't actually go through the entire web. So if someone is trying to search for a product through the shopping version of Google, it would omit results that are on providers like Amazon that do not have paid search results on Google. And now there's this new version of Skrugled where it kind of goes back to the Gmail privacy issue. And I think, I mean, personally, I think it doesn't have a lot of tact. I think it has, you know, interesting substance of how email is scanned for terms and analyzed, and then relevant ads or ads that are theoretically more relevant are shown to you in Gmail. I don't think that this is something that a lot of people out there don't know, or that many people get upset about.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was, does it really bother me? It's not like people, humans, are reading my emails, you know, like, does it really bother me if there is some sort of service scanning my emails that's going to give me more targeted ads? And I don't think it does.
Yeah, yeah. Like, if I'm going to see ads, I'd much rather see targeted ads. And I think that, you know, Microsoft is trying to use privacy as a competitive advantage here, which I think is a phenomenal strategy. I think that the privacy industry is very nascent right now, that it needs to mature like the security industry has matured over the last 10 or 15 years. And these are some of the wacky things that go on when it's trying to kind of be forced from the top down that these are important things that we need to belabor, and people are kind of missing the common sense behind it. Like, I think that this is definitely a way to get a lot of buzz about these issues, but I don't think it's necessarily in Microsoft's favor, and it could probably be done in a more tactful way.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, I'm usually one all in favor of throwing stones. I'm just wondering, you know, when enough is enough, maybe. You know, we've thrown this stone essentially before. You know, with the Gmail man, it was all about privacy and security and emails. So hopefully this campaign is actually done well, that it will you know, open the eyes of people who didn't know about this before. And, you know, in the end, I think it's all meant to kind of poke fun, and hopefully it'll be done in a very humorous way so we can all get a laugh out of it and click share. Yeah. And make that video go viral.
Yeah, I think that if they get the right elements in there of humor and emotion, and it's not portrayed the way that it's currently portrayed, then it would be much more well received than how this one's going.
Yeah, take a look at the IE campaigns, you know, between the I Heart the 90s and the Internet Troll, you know, that campaign, you know, those ones. Sort of making fun of ourselves, and the IE I Love the 90s campaign went viral. Very, very successful campaigns, not necessarily taking stabs at any of our competitors. So there are ways to create buzz without necessarily, you know, being a big meanie.
I agree.
All right, Paul, a while back we asked our viewers if we should do a Reddit AMA, that's also known as a Reddit Ask Me Anything. We didn't really get much response. That's okay. I mean, I didn't cry. I didn't stay up late at night, you know, tearing into my pillows that nobody loves me. It's fine. But you know who did do a Reddit AMA and was wildly successful at that is the Microsoft Surface team. So this is a really cool thing where you are exposed. They can ask you anything. So if you don't feel like being 100% transparent with your audience and with your consumers, don't sign up for one of these bad boys, because this is, you know, this is bare bones. Like, you are going to have to answer the tough questions. And that's essentially what the Surface team did over on Reddit.
Yeah, the Reddit AMAs, I think, are just really getting more and more interesting every year. Last year they had President Obama on there as doing an Ask Me Anything. They had Psy, the hit singer behind
Gangnam Style.
Exactly. I can't wait to see that one.
Yeah, I can do it better. Let's move on.
And Microsoft has tried a number of times to do AMAs with some of their more popular consumer-facing products. I think the Outlook team had done one that had like some mixed reviews, and I guess the Surface team had done one before. And then I just saw that they put this one on Reddit, and there were actually some pretty good questions that were asked. I mean, there's always good questions that are asked. The question is whether or not the person is going to provide the right types of answers and responses and be transparent. And I think Microsoft is getting a lot better at this. Like they, I've seen some of their AMAs really just bomb, and this one was pretty good. There was one comment that I thought was incredibly good from Stevie B at the Applied Sciences Group, and he talked about how they did some tech transfer from Microsoft Research to the Windows 8 Surface team to try and get the touch latency on the devices to get below 12 milliseconds. And it was just it was super interesting that a person who linked to a very specific video on YouTube about the Applied Sciences Group then was able to be responded to very quickly by the service team. And this guy's like, oh yeah, you know, I'm the manager of the Applied Sciences Group, and just really broke it down for the person. I thought that was one of the best answers that I've ever seen in a technical AMA.
Yeah, absolutely. And then did you feel satisfied by the end of the AMA, Paul? Like, did you get all the questions? Because I know there's a lot of people, you know, debating which Surface to get, or with the price tag, or which is, you know, is it worthwhile? And after reading it, did you feel that your questions were answered, or did you wish that you had raised your hand and asked him anything?
I didn't actually participate live during the event. I read it afterwards, but there were some of the questions that I've had. Like I've seen a number of reviewers and people say that, you know, the Surface Pro is better than the Surface RT, which is definitely a good sign for Microsoft, but it kind of falls short on tablet battery life and kind of falls short on laptop horsepower. And some people specifically asked this type of question, and the Surface team came back that, you know, they're trying to position this as better than a MacBook Air and also better than an iPad. In many of the top use cases. And I think that there's definitely some truth to that, but I don't know if that answer really resonated well with the Reddit community. But I think that there is certainly much more transparency. A lot of people were asking about there are some additional, they're not pins, but they're little ports that are on the snap portion of the, or like where you can snap in additional devices. And it seemed like the folks from the service team were alluding that there may be additional peripherals that could be like elongated battery life or docking stations or other things, and that they are reserved for future use. So that really got everybody excited about what those future use cases could be.
People do love that. They love the buzz. Well, I think it's awesome, and I think, again, it's just it's further proof that Microsoft is really trying to be transparent. You wouldn't go on that sort of in that sort of forum if you had things to hide, if you weren't proud of your product. So it's great. It's a win-win. I think it does great things for Microsoft, and it's obviously consumers get to get their questions answered. So go up and read it. You can find the link here and go ahead and read the service Ask Me Anything on Reddit. All right, Paul. So the other night, some friends of mine and I, we decided we wanted to have a Twilight movie marathon. And so in order to do this, we needed to get all the Twilight movies. And we realized that we didn't know that this is really hard to do nowadays because there's no blockbusters. I couldn't find it on Netflix, you know. So like, where do you go to get movies? And one of the options that we found to be successful in order to fulfill our Twilight needs was going to Redbox. And for those of you that don't know, Redbox, do you have these in LA, Paul?
Yeah, I think Redbox is nationwide. It's perhaps international. It might be in Canada, too.
Yeah, though, yeah. Essentially, they're like, usually I think of them at the grocery store or at the 7-Eleven, and it's just a kiosk, a vending machine where you can get movies, right? But they also have an instant streaming version, which will be exclusive with your Xbox Live. You can get this. They are now partnering up. You can be able to get Redbox instant streaming and downloads via your Xbox Live account.
Yeah, it's. I think this is a good experiment for Redbox that they're partnering with Verizon to provide Redbox Instant. And it's I think what they're looking at is for $8 a month, so
which
turning
is a good
it into
deal.
A
good deal to, compared to some. That's just right around the price it should be.
Yep, to turn it into a monthly subscription versus the traditional Redbox sales where you grab a DVD or a Blu-ray from one of the kiosks and then you get it for like $1 or $2 and then you return it the next day and you don't have to pay any additional amount of money. But if you keep it longer, then you pay those additional costs. But now with the $8 a month, you'd get 4 nights of credits for DVDs and unlimited streaming. So I think this really will be interesting to see how good their
streaming selection is.
That's really what it all comes down to is the selection. You know, Amazon's got some really great stuff, but the way that Amazon works, I think there's a Prime account, which may be differently, but the way I currently get my movies from the Amazon app on Xbox is I just pay per movie.
Right, yeah, so Amazon...
But that gets pricey, because I paid $15 for one movie the other night.
Yeah, so Amazon Instant has a few things about it. One is if you're a Prime subscriber, where you can get 2-day free shipping for $75 a year, you also get access to like 3 or 5,000 instant streaming movies and TV shows for no additional charge. But then you can also do the impulse on-demand renting or purchasing. So if you rent, you can rent in SD for like $1.99. You can rent in HD for generally $2.99. And then you can also have digital purchases, which you theoretically own. So that when you pay $15 for one movie, you can actually watch that whenever you want. Like you own that and you will likely be able to stream that for as long as Amazon's offering this service. So I definitely like Amazon Instant because you do have that option to pay a premium for likely an additional movie that's not available through the Prime subscription or through Netflix. And it also works with your Xbox. And now with Redbox getting into this, you can do the $8 a month with 4 nights of DVD credits so that you can just go down to your nearest grocery store, 7-Eleven, pick up a DVD and have it up to 4 nights or have 4 different DVDs for 1 night each. And for just $1 more, you can actually get access to Blu-ray plus the streaming. So I think this is really good competition in this space. Netflix just shot up about 90% in the last couple of weeks, so I think that people are becoming bullish again on these instant video providers. And
so now is a good time to buy Redbox stock, is what you're saying?
I try not to give stock advice. It'll be interesting to see how this works out for them and whether it helps them come into the digital age or if it kind of takes them away from their core competency, which is
the in-store vending machine, since their parent is Coinstar.
Right. All right, well, we'll just have to wait and see. In the meantime, check it out on Xbox Live. All right, everybody, that wraps up this week's episode. Thank you so much for watching. This week's question of the week is, what can we do to better improve ping? Send us your thoughts and suggestions and feedback and pictures and songs and anything you have sort of fan art that you want to just send our way, please do. And then we also wanted to wish you all a very happy Valentine's Day, Paul. Happy Valentine's Day, Paul.
Thanks, Laura. Happy Valentine's Day to you, too.
Maybe I'll come visit you for Valentine's Day.
What?
Maybe I'll come visit you for Valentine's Day.
I think that'd be nice. I think it's long overdue. I'd prefer to come visit you since you live in California, but see what we can work out. Thank you. Anyway, hopefully everyone out there has a wonderful Valentine's Day. Please share your Valentine's Day experiences with us as well. And we'll see you next week. Follow me on Twitter at El Foy.
And me at Full Mess.